You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. I'm going to be joined this morning by Kirby Hoberg. And Kirby picks a perfect day to be here because Allison just got off the air with Morning Air. And I was a guest. And now I have such a new appreciation for people who come on as a guest and not always sure what the hosts may ask them. And but, you know, Kirby, I've been just talking before we went live, and she seems pretty calm, cool, and collected, so she probably wasn't as nervous as I was this morning. But if there's a link for Morning Air, I talked about the five types of prayer, I'll be sure to share it and over on Reconcile to You on Facebook. So welcome to the show, Kirby Hoberg.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you. And you blog underthyroof.blogspot.com, and I'll have that in the show notes, and I'll say it a few hundred times while you're here, too, but underthyroof.blogspot.com. And, you know, I told you in a quick Facebook message yesterday that I had this like huge aha moment in while I was doing communion with one of the ladies I visit. And as I said the words, under thy roof, it was like light bulb. Oh, that's why. So tell me, why do you have that name as your blog?
Yeah, my husband actually came up with it. All the blog name ideas that I had were already taken. granted, not by like active people, but still taken. And I wanted something that would kind of give an idea that I was talking about both our little domestic churches and our own homes, and that wider church.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And you do. You do that beautifully.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, who is Kirby Hoberg?
Right. So I'm a 26-year-old stay-at-home mom. I have a 4-year-old and 2-year-old right now. And there's a new baby on the way in September.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm home with the kids during the day. And then in the evenings, I dance ballet and I do theater and singing and pretty much any other acting, theater stuff I can get my hands on.
So hence your comfort with just with being on the radio and talking live. I love that.
Yes, that happens. You're always asked to do weird random things in theater.
That's funny. No, you would have thought, you know, doing this every day that I wouldn't be nervous, but it's just that whole idea of you only get one chance to say this. I like recording when I can rewind and redo, but right. And I like that about blogging, too. I don't know about you, but I write it and then I rewrite it all before I hit publish. How are you with your blogging? How do you write?
I do that a little bit. I actually, the vast majority of the things I have that are like true articles tend to be written when I'm really mad about something. I might sound very nice, but typically it's because like I have mulled over this and really thought about it. And I write it all down and then it's like it's out there and I'm good.
That's fabulous. What is one of the topics perhaps you've done just lately that has been one of those moments like I'm angry and I'm going to write about this?
Oh, my last one was actually last week. And it was that time I cried in church because I did. Yeah. So we had like a relatively fine day with the kids. And there was a lady in front of us who turned around and said, "Can you do something about your child?"
Wow.
And I just kind of stared at her for like a good solid 30 seconds because I just couldn't deal with what was happening right now. And I wanted to leave, but I made myself stay in the pew, but definitely started tearing up. Everyone else was really great. Honestly, we've been in this parish for a long time and it's always been really great. This is maybe the first time anything negative has happened. So in a way, I'm glad that it happened to me and not a brand new person.
Good point.
I know it's going to be fine. I turned around and there were two guys I knew behind us. My first thought was, oh, great. More people saw me cry in church than I know. But, you know, everyone was really supportive and sweet. And that was good. Great to see. But yeah, getting all that out there, being like, okay, this is how you do family friendly in a parish.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Shame on her. That I had, we used to have a pastor that was so fantastic. If your kid was loud or crying, and he would stop, not the, obviously the consecration part, but if he was, you know, in another part of the mass or during the homily, he would start by thanking you for coming to mass. Thank you for bringing your child. Thank you for the sacrifice we know that it is to get your family here. And God loves to hear them pray too in their own special way. So good for you, Kirby, for bringing your children to mass and not letting that person scare you away. I'm going to pray for them because they clearly need it. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, having kids in mass is definitely a challenge. Like, it's an aerobic endeavor. You're up and down and around. But you know, it is one of those things that I really strongly believe it's a skill that we have to learn how to do this. And just like everything else is not enjoyable. Potty training is not enjoyable.
Funny. Oh, funny. It isn't. And you know what? And it goes by in a blink. I hate to be one of those moms. My kids are 18, 21, and 11. And, you know, I remember I actually joined the choir. This is a true confession from Allison. I joined the choir because I just couldn't handle trying to deal with the two boys in the pew. And my husband had insisted that we all go as a family. So I joined the choir so I could watch him struggle with the kids.
I actually do sing in the choir as well. My system is we double mass it. We all go to the 8 o'clock mass together so I can help out then and give my husband a fighting chance at hearing the homily.
Oh, you're such a good wife.
And then I stay and sing the 9:30, which actually works out well for me. It kind of gives me a second shot at hearing all the readings.
That is, you know, I signed the mass for my daughter. My daughter is profoundly deaf, and I signed for her. And so I feel I had a quick choir, and I feel like I sometimes miss stuff out. And I talked to a priest about it, and he's like, "We'll go twice." And I thought, that's a brilliant idea. But you know what I have not yet done in 7 years? Gone twice.
It's actually really enjoyable. Like, at first it was hard, but now, like, I actually find it really meditative. You can really keep gleaning more the more you hear it.
You've inspired me, Kirby. My guest today is Kirby Hoberg, underthyroof.blogspot.com. And we're just talking about her wonderful blog. And, you know, I also see that you blog for Everyday Ediths. Can you tell me what that is or who that is?
Yeah, so that's a collection of bloggers. Initially, it was called the Zelle Group. We recently changed over because we wanted to appeal. The Zelle Group is very much focused on mothers, Catholic mothers, which was great. But we were also feeling like we wanted to speak to a wider Catholic woman experience. Mm-hmm. So we took this quote from St. Edith Stein that I adore, that is, the world doesn't need what a woman has, it needs what women are.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It is beautiful. that's kind of our inspiration, where we're going with this. So we will collectively blog, taking turns on the group blog. So this month we've been talking about sacrifice all month. My post just went up there. It's a little hard to blog late in the month. You're like, okay, what hasn't been said yet?
How many bloggers are involved in Everyday Edith?
About 10. That's yeah, nice. We've had kind of a rotating, especially a lot of us are young parents. A lot of us have a lot of things going on. So we'll kind of rotate depending on who can take on more at a given time. Mm-hmm. But we've run some Instagram photo challenges. There's a great blog and group going on that does daily prayers. So you can pray along with, like, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, acts of contrition. It's just kind of whatever people feel called to put up there.
Oh, that's wonderful. And where can we find Everyday Edith?
Everyday Edith is at .wordpress. Uh-huh. And yes, there are different set up there. And on Facebook, we have both a group and a page.
Oh,
so feel
wonderful.
Free to join both.
Well, I belong to one. I don't know if I belong to both. When we get off air, I'll have to go double check. I love
and
reading.
And you'll find all the prayers in the group.
Oh, good. I love reading what other people blog. At first, I was all about me blogger. Like, I have too much to, you know, it takes too much time just to write. I don't have time to read. And then I realized, one, that stifles my faith life, my spiritual life, and who, like, how arrogant. Like, I have nothing new to learn. It's all about what I have to say. But I'm actually a better blogger, a better writer, because of what other people share and to follow their faith life. Do you find that you, I mean, as a young mom, I'm sure this is even harder. Do you find time to read other people's blogs?
Yeah, so I actually will set aside particular times in the day, kind of rotates if it's in the morning or the afternoon, depending on my schedule. Mm-hmm. But make sure I go through and kind of see what's happening for people, especially as new prayer intentions come up. I like to have a running prayer intentions list.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, and I also get a lot of great inspiration from this endow group I run at my parish. So I feel like a lot of what I've been writing about lately, we're covering the second half of the Summa right now from Thomas Aquinas. And a lot is based on reflections from that, which could get very academic, but it's beautifully done in a way that relates so well to our lives.
Can you tell us what the endow, I've heard this before, but what is the endow group?
So endow was originally founded in Denver, Colorado. And it is small faith study groups of women. You don't necessarily have to be Catholic, but it's definitely working towards understanding Catholic teaching and doctrine.
Gotcha.
As long as we all agree on that, I'm cool. But they tend to be on encyclicals, things like the Summa, apostolic letters, things good for you to read, but you're probably not going to do it on your own.
Right.
It's
or you're
a lot.
Gonna think it's, yeah. Or you're going to think it's something that you can't comprehend. But
right.
Once you start studying, you realize, oh, God, you know, the Holy Spirit really helps to inspire you to help you understand. God's not going to call us to learn something that or make his faith, our faith in him, too difficult to understand. We're talking today with Kirby Hoberg, underthyroof.blogspot.com. When we come back, we're going to dive further into Kirby's blog. She blogs about parenting and home life and Catholicism and ballet and the theater, which is very interesting. I was, just going along going, wait, that one we need to talk about. We have much more with Kirby Hoberg after these messages. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. Speaking of listening or reading, I should say, other people's blogs, I want to just draw your attention to Reconcile to You. This is kind of a big week for Reconcile to You. It's when we launch the Catholic Women Bloggers Network Blog Hop. And this month we chose to talk about confession. And it's our true feelings about confession. And I think this is probably one of the best hops we've had so far. So many confession chickens, that would be me. So many people who had misconceptions about going to confession and how it changed their life, how it healed them, how it strengthened their faith. Really, really good stuff. So if you're somebody who struggles with this whole idea of the sacrament of reconciliation, you just need to go to reconciletoyou.com today and go click right on CWBN, Catholic Women Bloggers Network Blog Hop, and check out. There's so far, I think there's almost 20 different blogs there to choose from. It's also Wednesday, so that means it's worth revisiting Wednesday. Again, more wonderful bloggers to read and to check out. And today I talked about the five conversations with God, the interview that I did on Morning Air, that blog piece is up again, reconciletoyou.com. Today on the show, we have Kirby Hoberg, and her website is underthyroof.blogspot.com. And you have four main topics that you like to write about. And I thought we'd just kind of break them all down for the remainder of our show. Let's start with parenting. I just wrote a piece for Abbey Press Care Note called Being a Good Enough Parent. So I've kind of got this parenting thought in my mind lately. And I love looking at young parents because I haven't been one of those in a long time. And I loved your piece on the number one lesson that you learned about parenting. Can you share that with me?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember exactly what I put in there because I wrote that a while ago. But
it was simplified parenting was the key.
Right. So a lot of the time I'm realizing that I was overdoing what it meant to be a parent. I was trying very, very hard to be like, I am going to do this as best as I can. It has to be different from the way I was a nanny or the way I was a babysitter. And I came to the realization that, like, actually, those skills are pretty fantastic. The goal is that, like, they need to not need me. Like, I need to work my way out of a job eventually at some point. So as soon as we can, we work towards being independent. Putting on your own shoes is a big one for me. Getting your own clothes on. But that is a huge, huge part of my parenting right now.
You're out in California, so you probably don't have this skill too much, but I couldn't wait for my kids to learn on put on their own coats.
Oh, and yes.
I used to be a preschool teacher, so we had the upside down coat trick where you lay the kid's coat in front of them upside down and they put their hands in first and they flip it over their head and
my
voila.
My toddler just figured that out on her own a few weeks ago.
That's awesome.
She's like putting it on the right way initially, so when she flips it over, it's upside down. We're still working on that.
Been there, seen that. That, and when they used to put their shoes on, and they'd put the left on the right and the right on the left, and I'd look at them and say, oh, your shoes are on the wrong feet. And this one time, this little boy looked at me and he said, but these are the only feet I have.
Oh, they're so literal. And I have a 4-year-old who talks very much like an old British man. And he has his whole life. He just kind of came that way. He'll come up to little kids at the park and be like, I believe I saw you yesterday.
Oh, no way. That's fantastic.
Yes.
Oh, is that one of the favorite things for your kids to do? Do they like to go to the park? Do you have one nearby?
Absolutely, yeah. We live in a 2-bedroom apartment right now with all of us.
Cozy.
Yes, cozy. With a toddler and a preschooler, that can feel a little bit like raising kids in a hotel room. So I've learned the trick is to leave every day. And you don't necessarily have to go anywhere. I just need to leave. I don't care if we walk around many blocks for 30 minutes. But when we all get back, it is so much better.
Oh, absolutely. Fresh air is just changes scenery, and fresh air is such a parenting gift. I did childcare for, 15 years. I did childcare and then preschool. And it was one of those days that we could get outside. It was night and day.
Oh, yes.
That
everyone
and a
sleeps
little
better, eats
yes,
better.
Including me.
Yes, sure.
That and music. I don't know if your kids like music, but I used to say it soothes the beast, the preschool beast. Just put on some even classical music or something that can get the wiggles out. It's good stuff.
Right. Yeah. My kids, of course, have to put up with a lot of classical music. I will give myself a bar just using a dining room chair for ballet. It's just a set of exercises we do like every day. That's done to a pretty standard set of music. It just kind of works. This is the plie music. This is the tendu music. So at this point, my 4-year-old has started ballet classes as well at the same studio, just children's division.
Nice. So
he can follow along pretty well. And the 2-year-old tries real hard. It's cute.
Is a 2-year-old boy or a girl?
Girl.
Little
she
girl.
Wants to join in so bad. So bad.
Won't be long.
I know.
That's wonderful. I love that you have your son dancing. That's fantastic.
Yes. I feel very strongly about including ballet in our education. We're homeschooling right now, so we'll be starting homeschool kindergarten in the fall. But for me, ballet is the grammar of movement. So just like I have everyone learn kind of basic Latin roots. It's not because I think you should be fluent in Latin your whole life. It's because this is the building blocks to doing other stuff.
That is so true. So many pro athletes talk about it's about their dancing and their ballet as a youngster and how they can attribute their quickness or their agility, just their balance to being introduced to dance early in their life. It's a pretty cool thing. Now, one of your articles was called Why Do I Want an Angry Toddler?
Yes.
Kirby, yes. Why do I want an angry toddler?
So this was inspired by an incident at the park I believe, how old was Therese? She was early 2, I want to say. I remember it being hot then. And she was just kind of playing around, and this little boy kept messing with her dress and then started like pulling up her skirt. And Ooh. She said, like, pushed it down and said, like, no, really emphatically. And the little boy was kind of okay. And I thought this was good from here. And then one of the adults started saying, like, oh, you should still be nice. You should still talk nicely. And it's like, oh, no. No, no, this is not how this rolls. Like, the kids had it fine. Like, something bad started happening, you respond with appropriate vigor.
Yeah, especially that.
The boy did the right thing. He's like, oh, I hear you. This isn't okay. Okay now. But it's teaching our kids that there are lines that are okay to enforce, mm-hmm. and that you should expect to be allowed to enforce them.
Mm. That's a great lesson. And no one, and so many were so afraid of like hurting people's feelings and making sure everyone's okay. But there's times where things are not okay. And you right. need to be able to raise your voice and make yourself known. There may be a little less bullying in the world if we were able to empower people to say exactly how they feel about the way they're being treated.
Right. Oh, and even how we talk to each other as adults, there's very much a, incentive to keep saying you're fine just all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, it's an emotional neutrality that we expect everyone to have to an extent. It's like, well, that's not even kind of true. Sometimes it's not fine. It really legitimately isn't fine. And maybe it won't be fine.
Yeah.
But that's an important thing to be allowed to hear that and say that. And that's kind of where faith comes in. It's how we are able to be, yes, it is not fine. It might not turn out okay. But I will ultimately be okay because my goal is not here on earth.
That's a great lesson. I love how you tied those together. And I think, you know, dealing with people's emotions can be difficult. I mean, even in my own family, I can tell, like, if I'm upset, the men in my family, there's three guys and then me and my daughter, my husband and my two sons, and then my daughter and myself. And when I start to get emotional, I can see the men like, not like they want to fix it and they're not really sure how to handle it. Instead of just, you know, I'll say to them, like, it's okay. Just, it is what it is, how I'm feeling today. It too shall pass, but, you know, don't be afraid of emotion. I think that's a great lesson that you share on your blog. Again, my guest today is Kirby Hoberg, underthyroof.blogspot.com. And I'm going to have the link to that, of course, in the show notes. We've been talking about parenting. When we come back, we're going to look at home life. I want to ask Kirby how her Lent is going. If you want to know more about people's Lent, again, I'm going to direct you over to reconciledtoyou.com, the CWBN blog hop. This is a group of fantastic women who come together and blog about different themes each month, and it lands right on my webpage, Reconciled to You. And this month, we're talking about confession, but last month, we talked about how we Lent, how we were all going to enter into Lent. And, you know, it's not too late. You know, feel like, oh, I've failed Lent already because here we are a couple weeks in. I haven't done this or I failed to do that. Well, the great thing about Lent is you really can't fail Lent. Life is sometimes Lent and it's never too late to start something. And what we start now and the whole purpose of Lent is for us to grow spiritually now, but to keep it going beyond Lent. So it's like a lifetime of journeying. So if you want to learn more about how other people are Lenting, you can go over to reconciledtoyou.com, click on CWBN. Yeah, I keep looking it up because, you know, it's only on my website. Why would I know? CWBN bloghop.com. And when you come back, we're going to talk to Kirby Hoberg more for underthyroof.blogspot.com. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. Yeah, you caught me talking. I'm usually pretty good about stopping, but, you know, sometimes you get somebody on this, you know, this actually happens with all my guests. I'm so excited to actually hear their voice and to have their attention for this hour that, you know, during the break, I lose myself in our conversation, but we have more conversation we're going to share with you. So that's a good thing. We're talking today with Kirby Hoberg, and her website, her blog is underthyroof.blogspot.com. And other than parenting, you have another topic called home life. And I noticed that in there, you were talking a little bit about Lent. So how is your Lent going, Kirby?
Pretty good, actually. This year I'm doing the 40 bags in 40 days challenge. Mm-hmm. Which kind of tied in, we're moving right after Easter. Wow. So there was a significant amount of decluttering that just had to happen anyway. Mm. And I figure I might as well make it prayerful and part of a bigger thing if I have to do it anyway. And it's actually been fantastic because I'm not really having big struggles over, like, do I love this thing or not? Most of what I'm cleaning out is truly trash. It is stuff that I don't know why I still have this, like completed crossword puzzles, broken toy stuff, so much paper.
Well, I actually saw that on one of your blogs that you were going to be doing this. And I was like, yes, I'm adding that to my Lenten challenges. Yeah, I did day one. That's as far as I got. Day one.
You know, the moving, I think it's definitely incentivizing me to keep doing it. So I know it has to happen.
Well, I keep telling myself it doesn't say which 40 days.
It's true. No, it's true. And a lot of people, there's a giant, like 50,000 people closed Facebook group. Wow. And people are kind of doing it all year long. Like there's the official start during Lent, but you can join in whenever.
Well, I am hosting Easter, so there will have to be something that happens down at least the lower level of our home before I have company in, because it's my mother, my aunt, you know, these are, and my cousin whose house is beautiful and she keeps it very well and tidy. So these are people, like, I don't want them to come into my my hoarders episode. There'll be an intervention for sure if I don't get a little bit done down there.
This has definitely been a lesson, and like it's always looked relatively tidy, but I think largely it's because I'm really, really good at masking things. I am very good at packing drawers and hiding stuff in closets, so it looks the same. That's what's kind of hard about this. When I clear out four bags, it looks the same, but I swear four bags of stuff has left.
When we remodeled our kitchen a few years ago, I added about 6 or 7 new cabinets. And then I started to understand that's how my friends and family's houses always looked so neat, because they had places to hide stuff. And I didn't up until that point. Everything was just on any flat surface became a mountain.
Yes. That's one of my quick cleanup tricks that I'll do if there's a like last minute guest or something come over. Like, you just put it in the drawer, put it in a basket.
Exactly. Or I will stick it in bags and then run it upstairs to our bedroom where nobody goes. And then you end up with this, what I'm dealing with now is this huge mountain. It looks like a closet, and it's really not. It's the middle of my floor. Like, it really.
My trick for that has been to only put stuff I'm moving on my bed, so I can't go to sleep until I fix it.
I would just sleep on the couch. So good advice. Now, you also talked about why you are cleaning for Lent.
Yeah. So for me, getting to clean out my physical space is very, very much tied to my spiritual, emotional, mental clean out as well. So like, while this is also very much about the physical, getting all these bags out, because that has to happen, it's also about addressing all those spiritual baggage. Like, what am I holding on to that really doesn't have any business being here? It isn't being helpful, isn't being used, or I've meant to deal with that for a while. Mm-hmm. For me, Lent is very much about like, okay, just do it. Just get rid of the thing. Just stop holding on.
You know, one of the things I give up for Lent is television. Mm-hmm. And I am pretty like this out of all the things that I decide I'm going to try to do for Lent. This one I seem to be pretty good at. I do not watch TV from Sunday at midnight through Saturday, sometimes at dusk, but usually I make it till Sunday. And I find that this gives me so much more time I can devote to God, to my work, to my family. And after Lent, I have such a desire to like keep it up. And I do usually pretty good until Christmas Hallmark movies come out.
And then all bets are off.
That is my total guilty pleasure. I don't watch it. I don't even know they, I didn't realize they even had movies the rest of the year. I'm like, no, just the Christmas ones. But I think that's part of the joy kind of that comes from Lent is finding that there are things that you thought you couldn't live with without, or that you hadn't even realized become so entrenched in your everyday behavior that when you stop doing them, it's like this liberation to do more important things or other things, or to actually live without chocolate. No, that's right. Not going to happen, but.
Typically, my setup for Lent is I do like a 3-prong approach thing. Mm-hmm. So there's normally something I give up, which this year is giving up the clutter. I take on, which is typically a new type of prayer thing that I want to give a real shot to. And some sort of prayer intention that I have all through Lent that is what I'm focusing on.
Nice.
And I use that as a way to try out new things that I think might be an interesting devotion, or that I think is uncomfortable for me, but not because it actually is a bad thing to do, but because I'm prideful and scared. So that's actually how I started wearing a veil at Mass, was because it was for Lent and it was the hardest, most uncomfortable thing I could think of to do.
Well, it's just interesting because that's next on my list of things to talk about, that I have a godly jealousy. I know. Talk about Holy Spirit at work. I have a godly jealousy because I have a few veils. I've worn them when I went to World Youth Day and we had Mass with the Pope. I felt really that I needed to wear this veil and I loved it. But my daughter's deaf, so I interpret the Mass for her. And it's just an American Sign Language kind of norm. You wear black or dark clothing so they can see your hands, and you know, I couldn't wear the veil. It's just distracting to her as I'm trying to sign. Plus, gosh knows where it would land when my hands start to go crazy. But I just such an admiration and a desire to veil. What brought you to, well, you said for Lent, but what was it like? Do you keep doing it? How is it received? All those wonderful questions that come with veiling.
So when we started, I was still in college. So I was going to our Newman Center that's in the town just next where we live now in Berkeley, California. Mm-hmm. But it was the town next to me in terms of where my college was located. So very much toward the politically progressive side. Kind of traditional stuff wasn't a big deal at that parish. So I kind of knew I would stand out a little bit, mm-hmm. Which made it a little bit harder.
Yes.
But it was like, okay, you know, this is an option that I have, just like I have an option of praying the rosary and joining in on the liturgy of the hours. I shouldn't not take advantage of this just because it's uncomfortable. I need mm-hmm. to really see if this is something that I might be called to keep doing. Once we got to the end of those 40 days, it was actually uncomfortable not to veil.
Oh, wow.
It's actually akin to feeling very naked. So it's very, very distracting for me if I don't have it during a Mass. Like, I'm very intensely uncomfortable, and not because I think I'm doing wrong. It's just I don't have what I'm used to. I wear dresses and skirts most days of the week just because it's what's comfortable for me. Mm-hmm. So the veil is really the main difference for me when I'm going to church, when I'm in Mass, and during my daily life. The veil is pretty much the only thing that changes.
You know, it's interesting to talk about attire for Mass. I know there's a great movement on Facebook to show your Sunday best and to show what you wear. And I, again, have a godly jealousy for that as well, because I have to wear this muted clothes so that my daughter can focus on the Mass and not on her mother's bright flowery shirt and end up with a headache or crossed eyes. Like, I just need to kind of be more aware of that. But that idea of coming to Mass prepared to meet the king, to make this a special moment and to come. I love seeing people come in their Sunday best and to have their veils. And I just think that's, you know, people go, oh, that's so old fashioned. And, you know, God doesn't care about all that stuff. And yeah, he'll take you however you come. But how pleasing that must be when people take that time and are excited to come see him, come see Jesus, and completely prepared in their mind, their body, their, you know, their outward appearance matches their inward desires.
Right. I think about it as like, this is Jesus. I should care about going to see him at least as much as I would care about going to see the president.
Yes.
At least as much. If yeah, not so, then my priorities are really messed up. One of my favorite things about Valiant, I had this other friend, he was in the choir with me. She just moved away this year. He also veiled. And during the Triduum Mass, when all the altar is stripped and the Eucharist is removed and taken down to the altar of repose on Holy Thursday, mm-hmm. We take our veils off. It's the only time in the year that Jesus isn't present. So we take it off. And it is like, you almost want to cry.
Just telling me I wanted to cry, Kirby. Like, that just, wow. What a beautiful, powerful message. Wow. Well, I think we're going to end on that note before we go to the next commercial, because that's just what an incredible vision. We're talking today with Kirby Hoberg. Her website, her blog is underthyroof.blogspot.com. She talks there about parenting and home life and Catholicism. We come back, I'm going to ask Kirby, why is she Catholic? I think that's an incredibly interesting question that everybody has a different answer for, but I'm curious to hear hers. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. We're talking this morning with Kirby Hoberg. Her website is underthyroof.blogspot.com. That's her blog. And she talks there about parenting and home life and Catholicism and ballet and acting. And before I went to commercial, I said I was going to ask her why she is Catholic.
Yeah.
So, Kirby, why are you Catholic?
Initially, I was Catholic because I was born that way. I'm a cradle Catholic. My dad was also a cradle Catholic. My mom converted when I was two. I was two or three. I was very little. I don't remember it terribly well. but I grew up very much with convert fever as my experience of what adult Catholicism was. That's a little bit different. And I think that was such a gift to me, and that it has caused me to see so much of potential in our Catholic faith, and why I've stayed Catholic, besides I have a very faithful Catholic husband, and that helps all the things.
Yes, it does.
It really does. Is that every time I delve deeper into the faith, I never found inconsistencies. I never found incongruencies. The more I poked, the more clear and concise it seemed to be. And I just kept getting to be like, man, church fathers, y'all are so smart.
You know, and they are. And I just learned about the church fathers probably 3 or 4 years ago. And that was even after my reversion. And I love you talked about the convert fever. I had the revert fever, and it really does change. Like, you start to fall in love and you get the excitement of the faith that sometimes when you're a cradle Catholic, after a while, you kind of become just comfortable in it, and you stop asking questions and you stop digging deeper, which I love that you didn't, that you actually.
Yeah. That's very important to me, is maintaining that idea. We participated in a program at our parish called Alpha. I believe it started in England, but it's kind of, if you can think about it, sort of like pre-RCIA level of questions, things like, what is God? How do we know this is true? Very basic stuff. But if I am not willing to think and answer those kind of basic level questions, I'm being way too prideful where I think I am in my faith life.
I don't know who said it, but they said, if I can figure out God, then I don't want him as my God. Like, I don't want to be able to delve the depths of God to the point where I figure him out. I want him to be mystery. I want him to be always bigger and better than me, because what's the point of having a God or believing in him if you are equal? And I'm right. So not even close. And I plan to keep that way, though sometimes I forget, because I was talking about how being in ministry, this is like my job. And I sometimes forget, like, we're not business partners.
Right.
Like, God, this is what I think we should do. And it's like, well, that's a nice suggestion, Allison, but I'm still the one in control.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That thing about you being God and me not. So something on the blog that kind of surprised me, like, I expected to see the parenting thing, the home life thing, the Lent thing, but I did not expect to see the ballet thing. Tell me about this part of your life, Kirby.
Right. So I think this is the part where most people kind of have a ha moment. Mm-hmm. I had started ballet back when I was 4 and danced in various forms, ballet, contemporary, modern, even Irish dance, up through high school. And then I took a single modern class in college. And then I pretty much stopped up through my second child being born. Mm-hmm. And I kept putting it off as, like, I'm going to do this later. I'm going to do this after I finish my degree. I'm going to do this when the kids are bigger. And I was finally like, you know what? It's been 7 years. Later is taking an awful long time to come. Maybe I should just try. So I found this wonderful, wonderful studio. I'm so grateful to have found them in my town. Mm. And my first class, I was horrendous. I did literally nothing right. It's like, I know what you're saying, but it's like I can't make my body do it.
That's funny.
It was a very humbling experience. I proceeded to, like, not be very good for like a month, 2 months, something like that. A long time.
Oh,
a long time that I kept sticking with it. But, you know, it did eventually come back. It took a lot of dedication, but last spring I got to get back on performing on stage in our spring show. That was great. And that kind of gave me the impetus to be like, okay, like, I can handle this. I can handle the late night rehearsals, because they are very late. I tend to get into class. Class starts at 7:30. So you're down there about 7 to get ready and warmed up. And we go until 9, maybe 9:30 if we appoint class. And then you would stay for rehearsal. And if you were lucky,
my goodness,
you got out at 2:30. In reality, especially the closer you get, it's more like 11.
Wow.
So it's hard. That's very hard to pull off. You have to peak early.
I know. And you were talking about, before we came back, about being an early, we were talking about homeschooling. And my favorite part of homeschooling my kids was sleeping in. You're like, well, I'm an early riser. So that must have been really, like, did you sleep? Or do you sleep?
Yes, I do sleep. I found the trick is I get most of my chores and kid homeschooling and all that adventure kid stuff time done in the morning, pretty much before noon. If it is a home task, blogging task, if it's not done before noon, it's probably not happening today. That's just kind of the reality of how I work. I do all my meal prep then, my laundry, errands, all that stuff. And then I am serious about taking nap time as downtime.
Nice.
Like,
I
noon
miss
to two.
Nap time.
Oh, yeah. Even when we don't nap, I do turtle time.
Nice.
I found that to be incredibly necessary, just because there are times, like, I had an injury over the summer where I had a sprained ankle. I broke my toe. Not actually doing ballet.
I was just going to say, what kind of dance were you doing?
I stepped off a curb wrong.
Ouch.
I broke my toe just, like, running into the dresser. It's not like
sorry,
I didn't have opportunity.
You, but...
but it's true. It's ridiculous. It is a ridiculous way to get injured.
I think you need to make up a better story about that, Kirby.
I know.
put in those acting skills to use.
Yeah. Like, no, I'm just going to do this. I did my first theater show back, just wrapped up a couple weeks ago. We did The Importance of Being Earnest. And that was also fantastic. It is hard to be on stage until 10:30, mm-hmm. Every weekend night at least.
Wow.
So you kind of develop a different system of working. You have no weeknights during rehearsal. You have no weekends during performance. Yes. And we kind of worked out a system with my husband that he goes in to work very early. He leaves about 7 and he comes home though about 4-ish mm-hmm. in the afternoon. So then we're able to have time together and to have dinner together before I have to leave for mm-hmm. all the performing stuff.
Oh, see, it's interesting. My husband and I kind of do the same thing. He goes in really early. He's zoned by 4 and he's in deacon formation class. I call it deacon school. So it makes sense to me. So we have the same thing, you know, because our daughter is 11. He's like, I want to do this, but I don't want to miss out time with her.
Right.
So it's wonderful to have that chunk, even just 1 hour, even a half an hour of family time really does sustain us to keep doing the things that we want to do, that we enjoy doing.
Absolutely. You know, it's hard to have these, like, it's very time intensive hobbies.
Yeah, they are.
I have a hard time considering myself professional in my head. I'm going to have to get over that at some point.
Absolutely.
But, you know, like, this is still important to be able to spend time with my husband, to have us all be a cohesive family mm-hmm. unit as well. I'm so grateful to be able to be home with my kids. During the day. Otherwise, I feel like I would hardly have time to play with them and see them grow and really get to know them.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things I did really love about homeschooling, I feel like it created this bond in our family that, you know, we don't always get along, but we are, you know, much closer than if I had. And I know not everybody can homeschool, and it was really a grace and a blessing for us, but it was really that family time. But to carve it out any way you can, even that Friday, you know, movie night or game night, I think it's important.
Right. These, like, family culture traditions are a huge thing for us. Keeping that going, and it's a little bit different. Like, we definitely do things a little bit differently than each of our families growing up. Mm-hmm. We have probably other people would consider funky ways of sharing, like, home duties. My husband does all the meal planning and grocery shopping.
I'm so jealous. More godly jealousies.
He loves it. He's so good at it. It's like a game for him. And I really don't mind cooking every day. I'm great with that. I just don't want to be creative on demand. So meal planning is not fun for me. But, like, all the ingredients are there. So I'm like, I will make it happen like a little kitchen fairy.
Oh, I love it.
And then it's great.
It's fabulous. I love that balance of, and you're like, I hate to do dishes and my husband hated to do laundry. So for years, we just split it. He did all the dishes. I did all the laundry. I'm why didn't we think of this for the first 10 years of our marriage? Well, to me, it's. Go ahead, Kirby. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I just feel like it's so important to, like, get to figure out what you and your spouse are actually good at, what you really enjoy, what your strengths and talents are. I'm mm-hmm. very handy. I'm very good at fixing stuff. And my husband is fantastic at the big logistical planning when we have trips, either for vacations or for weddings or something. He will figure out, like, all the restaurant stuff, like, down to menu options. And, like, it's a gift.
It is a gift. And I love how you balance each other. So, Kirby, it has been such a pleasure to spend this morning with you again. My guest today has been Kirby Hoberg. Her website is underthyroof.blogspot.com. I hope you'll come again and spend some time with me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
It was my pleasure. And again, you can go to underthyroof.blogspot.com. You can see all the wonderful things that Kirby has to say about parenting and home life and ballet. Very unique perspective. Wonderful guest, Kirby Hoberg. You've been listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.